Up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and for the next hour or so, you're kind of stuck with me. So if you'd like to join us, you can, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960 every Saturday from 10 to 12. We're here talking about cars. And you can help me if you tell me about the year, the make, the model of the car, tell me what kind of mileage it's got, and then maybe give us the symptoms. What does not work well for everybody else is for us to talk about all the parts that you've already installed. Because if they didn't fix the car, then talking about those is not really beneficial for the situation. So symptoms, that's what we talk about, is symptoms. And there's a give and take associated with that, because I'm going to ask you questions. And I must admit that every once in a while I get it right. I got two letters this week, one of them from the Midwest, who said that I had guided him to the right area, and he got his car fixed. And he said that he had ordered a new throttle body for his Toyota to the tune of $500, and he got to return that because of the advice I offered him. However, I'm only as good as your symptoms. I'm only as good as your answers. So if I miss, it's your fault, not mine. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. He's in Mesa. He's the only shop in Mesa on my list. In 1970, they started, and they've been providing great service to their customers in the Mesa area. They have ASC-certified technicians. They're really smart. They're good in diagnostics. They have friendly reminders to let you know when your vehicle may be due for service. So Thompson's Auto Repair is located on Main Street, just east of Stapley and Mesa. Brian and Thelma are the couple that you would hope to move in next to. They're that kind of people, and they're very, very kind. So my guest the next couple hours is a guy named Paul. We hired Paul about how long ago?
About a month.
About a month ago. And the reason why he's on the show with me is because we've had one service rider for the last month, pretty much the last month. And Paul has been a workhorse that has surprised the entire operation, because you're handling what typically is being handled by two people, and you're doing it all by yourself. Now, I also want to tell you that I walked in this morning, and I was amazed how clean your desk was, and I was amazed that there was no ticket sitting there waiting to be scheduled or in stage, what we call stage. They're ready to be assigned. So you guys did everything on Friday.
We did, yep.
Just delivered everything.
We did.
Okay, so that pleases the heck out of me. I can see you're working. Now, your service rider job consists of what tasks?
I deal with the customers. If they come in through the front counter, they explain their issues. I try and write that down as completely as possible. Share that with the technician.
If you can turn him up a little bit, Mark.
When we do the repairs, I kind of explain to the technician what the customer said to me in case I missed something in the typing it all out. And then I just kind of watch the flow of the shop, kind of keep the work moving. If we have a parts issue, then we can kind of schedule around that. But that's pretty much what we do.
And so where are you in the hierarchy of things? Where are you positioned? Are you watching out for me? Are you watching out for you? Are you watching out for the technician? Who are you watching out for?
Well, in my mind, I try and be the eyes of the customer. I want to listen to what they say. I want to know what their problem is, and I want to share that with the technician. And it's kind of it's a fine line between being too technical and not being technical enough. So that's pretty much my idea of what I do.
So in the left ear, you're getting the customer's version of the symptoms, and then you're going to give it in a slightly more technical nature to the technician.
Correct.
But I think I told you at the very beginning that you are between the technician and the customer.
Mm-hmm.
So you're there to protect the customer from the technician. Your job is to ask the right questions.
Mm-hmm.
Your job is to facilitate the communication. But even more important than that, when the technician comes in and you know that this car's in for a vibration, and he comes in and says the rear main seal needs to be replaced, and that's $800, then what happens? What does your brain at that point do?
That doesn't solve the customer's issue.
Okay.
That might solve the technician's financial issues, but it does not solve it for the customer.
All right, so I know that I wrote this down for you, and I'm going to try to regurgitate it, but we get the customer symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
We then dispatch it to the technician.
Mm-hmm.
The technician is supposed to diagnose the problem.
Right.
Then there's an estimate prepared. And then, of course, you get the estimate okayed. The last part is we need to make sure that the symptom is now fixed.
Mm-hmm.
So the vibration's gone, the oil leak's gone, the miss is gone, the rough idle's gone, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
So that process is ingrained and branded into your head.
Right.
Okay. And that's important as far as I'm concerned. I know there's lots of other shops that I've copied, and I admit that. I'll meet somebody, and we'll have dinner, or we'll you know, be at some kind of an association meeting, and they'll say something that I like, something that makes a difference to me, so I can institute that. Sometimes it doesn't work, but most of the time, if it caught my attention, it does work. So we're kind of interested in that kind of stuff. So you're going to help me interview customers. You're going to help me, and every time you've got a question, I want you to touch my arm. Okay, because you're kind of to my right, and I'm watching the screen.
Okay.
So you're going to just touch me, because that tells me I have a comment. All right? Sometimes okay. I'll look at you, too. So we're going to start with Hector. Hector, thank you for holding. How can we help you this morning?
Yes, sir. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you.
I have two small questions. First one, I have a universal wiring kit that I purchased from Painless Wiring.
Okay.
To put into my 72240Z. I was wondering, what type of wire loom would you recommend that I use, or where can I purchase or get information on that to protect the wire?
Okay, so what you're talking about is that you have a variety of options available to you. You can wrap it all in black tape. You can take some of that corrugated loom that has a split down the center and wrap the wires in and with it. And what other options do you think you have?
I saw a mesh. I saw the wire loom from Harbor Freight, that plastic one, like you said, a split middle that I could put in, and the tape was not enough. I mean, I thought the tape would not be as protective, but you say it is, I'll use tape.
Yeah. So I know that the tape is an option, and I know the split loom, the stuff that's split down the middle, the corrugated-looking stuff is an option, but did you have a third option?
There was a mesh that I looked up. It looked like a netting kind of it was round also, but that was expensive, so that was, you know, somewhat of an option.
All right. Paul, what do you think?
There is, you can go to some of the better auto parts stores. There's a high temperature wrap you can buy that I would recommend for the engine compartment, and specifically that goes near that exhaust manifold, because you really want something that's going to, like a 1,000-plus degrees, because that manifold on those things can get pretty hot.
And what that could be is a Teflon tape. It's a heat tape, and you can use that Teflon tape, because you're right. My diesel the exhaust temperatures on that are oftentimes can be 800 all the way up to, depending on who I'm racing with, all the way up to 1,100 degrees. and actually, my wife races a lot, and so I watch her temperature on the exhaust of her car. But I think you've got a couple of different varieties. Depends on where the wire's at. You also have heat shrink. And for underneath the dash, where there is no exposure, you can get some heat shrink and slide it over the loom, and then you just warm it with a match or a little butane lighter, and it pulls together. And if you did that every foot, it would sure make diagnostic easier when we're underneath the dash, because we don't have to cut the loom open. The split loom works well underneath the dash because it's not exposed to heat and it's not exposed to sunlight. And it also makes it a little easier for us to open up a section of the loom. The braided stuff that you have, as long as it fits tightly, I like that. But it doesn't give you the rubbing protection that split loom does. So it looks nice. It looks nice. But last, there's a big difference in electrical tape. You can buy the really cheap stuff, and you can buy the really expensive stuff. And I like the 3M. And I like to wrap it where I overlap halfway on each one. So I'm one of those anal guys that will wrap my looms myself. Now, here's what I did find out years ago. You know how when you get to the edge of the loom, you take your fingers and you just kind of stretch the tape and break it?
Uh-huh.
That never works.
And
okay. You have to literally cut the end of it with a pair of scissors and then just gently roll it around. Because when you stretch it like that, then you roll it around, it's going to come loose. So that's what I would do. You got lots of options, but I agree with Paul. Underneath the hood, you either use the Teflon, a wrap tape, or you're going to have to figure some way to deal with the heat. Now, you could do on some of this Z-car, you could keep away from the exhaust and loom it a little further away or run it up on the fender wells, but you still got the hood shut.
2 minutes.
And the hood shut, it means the heat rises to the top, so the entire engine compartment's not necessarily going to vent all that heat. So, but it does in the sense that when you're moving down the road, we got cold air running across the grill, across the radiator, and into the engine compartment. So that's going to drive some of the hot air out. However, as it goes through the radiator and the condenser, it gets superheated because both of those are hot. So it's not like you got cold air there. So anyway, that's the answer we're going to give you. Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You betcha. You betcha. Wiring loom. I'll put his number down there. Wiring loom. So that's an unusual question I've never had before, but actually we talked about four different kinds of looms. And as many hot rods as we see, you'll see all of those kinds on there. And oftentimes you'll get the loom with the wire harness that you get, especially that one braided one, that one netting one. You'll see that one a lot.
1 minute.
The hard part is if you're going to put loom on it, it can't be something that's solid round because of the connectors at the end. So either you're going to have to cut some wires, slide the loom on, and then put the wires back together,
right,
or you're going to have to use the split loom. So the split loom solves that particular problem. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And if you're outside the Phoenix area, then we have a number for you, 888-960-9696. 888-960-9696. With me is Paul. He's a new service writer at our facility. He comes as a well-experienced service writer, and when we come back, we'll talk about some of the things he likes in our industry and some of the things he doesn't like in our industry, and he'll give me some examples of that. If you'd like to ask Paul a question or if you'd like a car question answered, then again, that number is 602-508-0960. I'm Mark Salem. This is KKMT. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is Paul. He's a new service writer that has come to work for us. And I want to tell you that the time you've been here, you've done really, really well. And you've been in situations that where you've had to just haul the entire load of service writing on your shoulders. And it's not gone unnoticed that you've done a pretty good job of that.
Well, thanks.
All righty. IMM Auto Services in the northeast quadrant of Tempe. Why are they important? Well, if you own a Volvo, a Saab, a Fiat, and an Alfa Romeo, then they're important to you because that's what they specialize in. Now, they can handle all the cars in your garage. So Chevy, Toyota, Ford, Dodge, Honda, they can handle those. But if you've got a Volvo, Saab, Fiat, or Alfa Romeo and one of those, then IMM can be a one-stop service center for you. So they're just south of the 101, actually south of the 202, just west of the 101, and they've been in business since 1972, so they're not a bunch of spring chickens. That's IMM Auto Service. Let's go to the phones. Bill, good morning to you. How can we help you this morning?
Yeah, I have I just bought a 2005 Buick LaCrosse, and the front two tires were replaced last year. But the back ones are 6 years old. I guess the question is, should I replace them?
No. Paul?
Yes?
Again, it depends on what kind of driving you do and the condition of the tires.
Okay.
Do they have acceptable tread to them?
Like they've never been driven.
Okay. And I think you're asking the question is because of all this all this dialogue that's going on all over the United States about when tires expire and when you should get rid of them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So based on that, you've got an 05 LaCrosse, and if those are the original rear tires, those tires are 12 years old. Yes?
These tires are 6.
Okay, fine.
They have 11. The second two digits are 11.
Okay. Then those tires are 6 years old, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to tell you that I'm deeply involved in this tire issue as a consultant and as an expert. And I thoroughly believe that 8 to 10 years is the window.
I'll oh, really?
You, there's so much misinformation. There's people out there that talk about that that Arizona's different. So mm-hmm. you'll have people that will tell you in Arizona you need to change them every 5,000 miles. And that's just flat out, can I use an acronym? BS. that's just wrong. And then they talk about, well, my tires are in my garage all the time, so they should last longer. That's a lie. They talk about that I'm from Minnesota, so I don't have the temperatures. That's a lie.
Mm-hmm.
The fact of the matter is your window is 8 to 10 years. I want to tell you that on my family's car, if they're in town here and they're not hauling a bunch of my grandkids to L.A. to go to Disneyland, then I'm going to cycle out their tires at 9 or 10 years. But frankly, they're gone long before that. So
mm-hmm.
I'm not really up against that. But in your particular case, let me put it to you in a really clear way. If you wanted to take my 4 grandkids to Disneyland in that car, I'd let them go with you.
Okay.
All right, so.
The reason I'm asking is there's microscopic checking on the sidewall. I say microscopic, you can hardly see it, at least I couldn't, without a magnifying glass.
And I can tell you that is an issue because there are about 5 tire guys in the Arizona area that are experts. One of the very best guys, John Dawes, just passed away. But John and I had discussions about this. And here's the problem. You could get 20 guys that are tire experts to look at weather checking, and you'd get 20 different answers on whether or not it's good or it's bad. But I'll tell you what my opinion is. My opinion is the weather checking is so deep you can see the air inside of the tires. It's
yeah.
time to get rid of it. But a small amount of weather checking on the outside of a tire is of no concern of me personally.
Okay.
Now, I'll tell you who I do respect. I respect Discount Tire. Now, Discount Tire has drawn the line at 10 years, so they will not even touch, rotate, balance, patch mm-hmm. a 10-year-old tire. Period, mm-hmm. period, period. So they've kind of set the standards because nobody else has done that. Last but not least, let me explain the real issue here. The real issue is we got the tire companies. If we start expiring tires, what do you think their sales will do? Okay?
It's kind of dropped.
Well, think about this. If we're expiring in the tires, then people are going to be expiring tires. It's just like food, a gallon of milk. It goes in the trash and you buy a new one.
Right.
So their sales are going to increase, it's been estimated, 30 to 50%.
Yeah.
All right. Now, on the other side of this issue, we got lawyers. And if we expire your tires at 10-year and the tire blows out at 11, they can't sue anybody because mm-hmm. you were supposed to get rid of that tire. So the lawyers don't want the expiration date on a tire because that eliminates some of the cases that they get to file. The tire manufacturers do want a limit on the tire so they can sell more tires. So those are the two opposite camps.
Right.
And that's the whole story.
Right.
All righty.
Okay. I have another question, if I may.
Go ahead.
I have a 97 E150 with a V6 in it, and it's set a 0340 cam position light.
Okay.
And I guess I kind of wonder, is the thing still run? Sounds decent and everything. And what's the danger of driving it that way?
Okay.
Or what can be the problem? Because I've tried to check out the position sensor, and it checks out according to the book.
Okay, well, you really can't check out the sensor unless you put it on an oscilloscope or you watch it in a scanner.
Oh,
okay. So let me tell you, how many miles are on this thing, by the way?
142.
Okay. This could be some slop in the timing chain that the cam sensor is picking up. So if I were charged with the responsibility, I'd put it up on the rack, and I would have somebody look at the distributor, and I would be underneath there, and I'd have a big pry bar, and I'd be moving the engine left and right. And I would have him touch my wrench but look at the distributor. And if the rotor and my wrench move in complete synchronization, the timing gear is okay, the timing and gear chain. If there's a lot of movement where I'm moving the wrench down below and the distributor's not working, then that's something we might want to address. There is little if, in the absence of any other symptoms, there is little if any risk other than you're not going to pass emissions. Because they plug into your car, and if you have a car, they're not going to pass you. So if you wanted to wait on this until it got worse, I wouldn't have any problem with that if you were my customer.
I see. Okay.
Right?
Got it.
Okay.
Yeah, I've got a year until I have to renew my license on that thing. So
yeah,
I have till then. I have a OBD reader.
1 minute.
Right.
And so I turned it off, and then I went and drove it, and it came back on again. So I know that's there.
Yeah. Well, see, here's the deal. The crankshaft sensor tells you what's next cylinder. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. The cam sensor tells it when to start counting. The fact that it still runs says the cam sensor's not bad, because if the cam sensor's not bad, then the computer doesn't know when to start sending fuel and spark. So how do we know if we hear 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6? It's really, it's this. There's six. Where do I start counting one? Does that make sense to you? That's what the cam sensor does. It tells it when to start counting. But the crankshaft sensor gives it the revolutions, but the cam shaft sensor says when to start counting. The fact that it starts and runs tells me that the cam sensor is not bad. It could be something else, but it's not the cam sensor. 602-508-0960. Bruce and Larry, you'll be my first two callers on the back side of the break. I'm Mark Salem. This is 960 KKNT. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Mark Salem here with Paul, a new service writer that works for us, and his wife, Jan. And I'm going to ask you the really hard question just real quick. How long have you been married?
39 years this August.
You cheated, though, because she just told you that.
That's right. And I'm a smart man. I listen to my wife.
Well, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think as we get older, we learn that. Renee and I are either 42 or 43. I don't know. We got married in February, so we're either approaching 42 or approaching 43. I don't really care. Anyway, but we should be proud, because we're probably in a single-digit percentage. Anyway, let's do what we said. We're going to go to Bruce real quick. Bruce, you're first. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. I just wanted to thank you. You helped me out with an RV a while ago, and my old RV, and I was a new customer to your shop the other day. I was very impressed, and everybody was real accommodating and helpful to me there. So I wanted to thank you for that. I've got a 2500 HD Duramax Allison with about 30,000 miles. It's a 2011. So far, the dealer has replaced the complete DEF tank twice. Once, I believe it was a pump, and they had to change the whole thing. And the second time, it was a heater in the tank, so they changed the tank again. And there's supposed to be according to the manual, I'm supposed to get a warning at 1,000 miles, tells me to add DEF, and then another warning at 300 miles, where it starts beginning the countdown to go into the limp mode. And I'm running blind because I never get the 1,000-mile warning like it tells me I'm supposed to. And I'm just wondering if there's anything. Is this a recurring problem on these vehicles?
No.
Or something?
No. Let me ask you a question. Was everything okay before they started doing their tank replacement?
Yeah, when I first got it, as I said, I had 15,000. I got the 1,000-mile warning. I put DEF in it.
Okay.
It All cleared.
Right. All right. Well, and that's the question, though. The question is did the 1,300-mile work before they started all this stuff, right?
Right.
And then now it's not working, right?
Right.
Okay. So this is really their problem, because they created the problem. So this is an easy thing to deal. You go back and you're just nice, and you say to them, somehow or another, you've changed something that's important to me, and I no longer get the 1,000, I no longer get the 300. And
right.
The only thing I'm going to tell you before you go is look in your owner's manual, because it may very well be that if you don't reset everything properly, that it's just going to go along forever. So just make sure that there is no reset on your def light. Now, it's entirely possible that the sensor is in the tank, and that's going to turn it on, but I doubt the sensor's in the tank, because how the heck would the sensor know if he hits, if he's down to 300 or he's down to 1,000, unless it's a two-stage sensor. So when the fluid gets below this, it's 300, and when it gets below, or gets below here, it's 1,000, and it gets below here, it's 300. So
okay.
I don't know, and they wouldn't have dealt with the def tank. So, but in a nice way, you just say, this is something I'm sure you gave me. I'm 99% sure you gave me. And so before you spend any of my money, please call me with a diagnostic and an estimate. But from right now, I think you just need to review the work that you did.
Okay.
That's a nice way to handle it. Okay?
Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you, Bruce. Lute, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yes, hi, Mark.
2 minutes.
Thanks for your continued support and help. 1996 Plymouth Voyager. I have the electrical problem with it, and that's all my gauges on the front panel, they went down, number one. Number two, my brake lights, the tailgate lights, the brake lamp doesn't come on when I press the brake pedal, while the middle light, which is on the tail, on the gate itself, on the windshield, on the glass side, that comes on with
okay.
the brake, but
right.
the two end doesn't.
All right, well, we'll deal with one at a time. The dash gauges could be a bad connection. They can be a fuse, and I'll tell you why I think they're related. There used to be a time in fuse world that we hooked your dash gauges to your taillights. So when your dash gauges went out, the fuse popped, you lost your taillights, and that's dangerous. But they never told anybody that. and so people didn't know that. So before you do anything, I strongly suggest that you check the fuse for the dashes, and that'll be in your owner's manual. Now, looking at it ain't good enough. You got to take it out, and you got to put an ohmmeter across it, or you got to check it with a 12 volt test light or with a digital volt ohmmeter, because looking at it's not good enough. So check the dash.
FYI, I check them all whatsoever under the steering wheel.
Okay.
And also the one in the, which actually is not recommended, the fuse box, you know, which is okay. at the lift with the engine. I check them all. Everything
okay.
looks good.
All right. Then somebody's got to go in and do a diagnosis to find out if the connection's bad, if the electrical is bad, is the ground missing, or do you have a printed circuit problem at the back of the dash? So somebody has to do some diagnosis that's going to involve taking that dash panel apart. With respect to, you said you had the center brake light on, but you're missing the brake lights on either side of the center. Is that what you said?
That is correct,
okay.
And also when I put the trailer brakes comes on, and that is put by the U-Haul, you know, I put a hitch.
I understand. So we have to go in and look for power grand at each one of the sockets, because we're grabbing the trailer harness before the taillights. So we're not grabbing them after the taillights, we're grabbing them before the taillights. So the fact that your trailer works is nice information, but it's not important to me. The fact of the matter is that I'm going to start at the bulbs and work my way forward. So I don't know if you have bad sockets. I don't know if you have two bad bulbs. I don't even know if you have a good ground to the two bulbs. But if the brake lights work, then the ground is sufficient. So if the brake lights work but the taillights don't work, then that's a ground, or it could be vice versa. It could be that your park lights work but your brake lights don't, and that still could be a ground. But, you know, your car is 11 years old, and it's entirely possible that this is a bad connection that fixes both of them. But it's all I can tell you is when you go in, have them fix one problem at a time, because sometimes the first problem will fix the second problem, and you don't want to pay two diagnostic charges. So just go in and have them pick one. I'd probably pick the taillight one myself and deal with the taillights first and then go from there. Anyway, thank you very much, Luke. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be back right after this. Well, welcome back to everybody. 45 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Sitting to my right is Paul. He's a new service writer at our facility, and we're just kind of breaking him in, and he gets to hear what our philosophy is, and he gets to hear us answer questions, and but he's got plenty of experience. And you brought up a good point that I didn't catch. It appears that he had just had, and his name was Lute, he had just had U-Haul install a trailer hitch.
Right.
And if the if there's a relationship between those, then the first place to do is go back to U-Haul and be nice. Yeah. Walking in and yelling and screaming usually doesn't get you anywhere. So
that's
just
true.
Be nice. I have something that I didn't have before you put on the hitch. Now, here's the deal. They kind of have to diagnose it in order to answer the question if this is their fault or not. So it's kind of like I say on the radio a lot. No one knows what it is until we diagnose it. So if a customer says to me, you caused this problem, I really have to diagnose it first before I can say it is my fault or not my fault.
That's true.
So you have to find it. And the problem is that I have to do that for free. So in order to diagnose the car and say, it's not my problem, it's this problem, I have to diagnose it for free. So don't think for a minute that they're going to be able to bring a bunch of cars in and use that example, because that ain't going to work. All righty. Larry Harker's Auto is in Phoenix. He's 38th Avenue and Indian School, and he has been around since 1967. Bob and Ellen are the two big dogs at Larry Harker's Auto, but I want to tell you about Bob. Bob is probably one of the best diagnosticians I've ever met in my life. He has tenacity, and he has the basic fundamentals of how old cars and new cars work. So if you've got electrical brake issues, auto issues, vehicle emission issues, maintenance issues, whatever you've got, then Larry Harker's can take care of. But if you've been around town and nobody can fix your problem, then you need to take it to Harker's, because Bob can. Again, 38th Avenue and Indian School, Larry Harker's Auto. Bruce, good morning to you. How can we help you this morning?
Good morning, Mark. I've called you before. My neighbor is the one that had that Dodge truck with power steering gearbox issue.
Okay.
All right. I have two questions, and I'll ask them, and then you can answer them.
Okay.
I've heard them before on your station. The first one is your Cool Tool, the brake fluid tester. I have looked those up. Is there a difference between dot 3 and dot 4 at the tester level?
No.
Okay, so they're the same tester, because I find them both ways, and there's a difference in price, and I didn't know.
No, it's going to be hard. You're going to be hard pressed to find 3, but 3 has always been like 4. It may have a 10 degree difference either on boiling point or something like that, but they're very interchangeable. And so, yes, you can get either one, but I would get one that does both, just in case somebody had an old can of dot 3 in their garage and you need to test for that.
Okay, I haven't been able to find a 3-4 tester. I found 3, and I found 4, but not both.
All right, then if I were you, I'd get the 4. Because hands down, first of all, you're not going to know what's in the master cylinder. And I haven't seen a can of dot 3 for 10 years. So okay. I think you're best to do 4.
Got it. All right, I'm on with that. The second question has to do with trailering and tires. And I know you're the guru on that. I cannot remember what you said. You said it on the air. About bring an infrared temp gun and shoot the tires between where the tread and the sidewall meet. And I can't remember what you said was the high temperature for risk of catastrophic failure.
Okay.
And all that stuff. I just don't remember.
All righty. Well, we're talking about the crown of the tire, which is where the tread meets the sidewall. And you're going to buy one of those digital temperature guns from Harbor Freight.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to give that to your wife, who has pretty fingernails, because she's never going to check the air in your tires when you're on a trip, because she's going to get her hands dirty. And while you're filling up the car and washing the windows and getting all the kids freezies and soda pops and all that kind of stuff, she's going to walk around and gun each of the tires. More important than anything else, we're looking for that they're all the same. So
right. If
they're all 110 or 120 or 30 or 40, that's fine. At 250 degrees, the glue's going to come apart shortly after that, and you're in really big trouble. But I want to tell you, I've had a temperature gun, and I own from semi-trucks down to motorcycles. I'm not bragging, I'm just telling you. I have never had a truck of mine, even when I'm driving the semi and I'm hauling two big tractors up to the ranch and I'm weighing within 10 pounds of my gross weight, I've never seen a tire that approached 200. The most I've ever seen is about 150, 155, and I already knew that tire was coming apart, but I was 10 miles from home. I was driving the big truck with the tractors, and I knew it was going to blow out, but I didn't care because I was 10 miles from home. And it was an inner dual anyway, so I didn't have the equipment to do it. So to answer your question, you're looking for symmetrical. Symmetrical. You're looking for some kind of relationship between all of them. If all of them are 110 and one of them is 160, then you got a problem. And the problem may very well be that that tire just needs air. Skip checking the temperatures, or skip taking the pressures anymore. Just use that temperature gun, and plus your wife will, you know what else? You can use it when you're cooking. So when you're grilling steaks, you fly cut the steak and you stick that temperature gun in there, and 165, I think, is rare or medium rare. Mm-hmm. And then like 175 is medium, and 178 or 180 is well. So you can use that temperature gun there. You can use the temperature gun if your engine's overheating. You can gun the top hose and the bottom hose. And if they're both the same, the thermostat's not stuck. But if the top one is cold, and or top one's hot and the bottom one is cold, then the thermostat's stuck. So you can use that thing actually to find hot spots in a wiring loom if you've got a short. So yeah, that's what I would do. Just buy a couple from Harbor Freight and put one by the barbecue.
Is there an acceptable difference between, on a tandem axle trailer, what's the acceptable range between the temps front axle to rear axle?
Ah, you bring up a good point. Now here, let me put a picture in your mind. The tongue of the trailer is too low and the bed of the trailer is resting on the ball. So which set of tires, the front axle or the rear axle, is going to be the hottest?
Absolutely. That's where the fluid matters.
Absolutely. So if you were driving your truck, like my horse trailer, and if the front axle is running hotter than the back axle, I have two choices. I move some of them fat horses to the back of the trailer, or I'll raise the tongue of the trailer with my adjustable hitch.
Correct.
So,
okay.
And then one other thing on this tire thing, now you got me going. I tell a story that we went to Tucson. We're hauling horses down to New Mexico. My wife gets out, and she comes to me, and she says, the tires on the right side of the truck and the trailer are 20 degrees hotter than the left side.
Okay.
You know what it was?
No.
We're heading to Tucson. The sun's setting in the west, and so the sun is on the right side of the truck and trailer. So those tires are very the same, but they're 20 degrees higher than the tires that aren't in the sun.
Okay.
So she figured that out.
Eating.
Yeah, yeah. All righty. Well, listen, thank you very much. All righty. Bob, you're up next. Bob, how can I help you?
I got a rear-wheel drive, and my front end seems to have a little vibration. My steering has a vibration, but when I put it neutral, it seems to go away. Do you know what that might be?
Okay. I need you to get off of the Bluetooth or whatever you've got there.
I don't have... That's my speakerphone out. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. That's okay. So tell me that again. I heard you say something. You have a vibration in drive that's not in park, or in reverse that's not in park. Is that right?
Yes. When I'm driving, it's just a little vibration. When I put it neutral while it's still moving, it goes away.
Okay. Now this is what I want you to do today or tomorrow.
Okay? No. I said that wrong. Oh yeah, when I put it neutral, it goes away. Right.
Okay. All right, so here's what I want you to do. In the morning, you start it up, and I want you to pay attention to park, reverse, neutral, and drive. I want you to close your eyes, and I want you to focus on the vibration in park, and then I want you to put it in reverse, and I want you to hold your foot on the brake and just kind of tap the motor a little bit, just kind of run, run, run. Then I want you to do that in neutral, and I want you to do it in drive. If you find that the vibration is predominantly in drive and it's not in park, neutral, or reverse, then the motor mount, what we call the load motor mount, is bad. And so if the vibration is there in drive and not in park, neutral, or reverse, then the load mount, and you have four mounts, the load mount is the way that the engine tilts when you throttle up. So as you accelerate from the traffic light, the engine's going to fall on this one big pillow mount. Well, that's the one that takes the beating, because you're on that, you're laying on that, the motor's tipping on that mount all the time. So this isn't a hard one. This is one that some gray-haired guy is going to walk out in the parking lot, sit in your car, and diagnose this in about 3 seconds. I don't know about the young kid with three whiskers, but I can tell you the gray-haired guys have walked this path before.
Is there any problem? I never even get up to 40 miles an hour. I just go back and forth to the store. Maybe I drive 35 miles an hour. Is that going to hurt the car? It's a 91 car. It's probably not going to hurt that car, will it?
No, you're not. And if you were going to do the mounts at, how many miles are on that car again, Bob?
Well, no, I'm not going to do that. 167.
Okay. If I were you and you're only sticking around town here, I wouldn't do any of them. You're going to get some shops that say, oh, you got to do all of them. You're going to get some shops that say, you got to do the two matching ones. And then you're going to get 100 different things. But if that's all you got and all you do is drive around town to the liquor store and back, then I'm saying
right.
You don't do them.
Well, I said the grocery store. I left out the liquor store.
I'm just teasing you. You know that.
Well, I'm not.
Well, and I want to tell you, thank you for letting me tease you, because a lot of times they'll snap back at me, I don't go to the liquor store. I was just joking. So
no, it's in walking distance. So.
All right. Well, good enough. All righty. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Tom, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hi. I have a high-mileage Hyundai Elantra, and I have
two
questions, but I'll give you the one that I think is the most perplexing to me.
Okay.
I have a low idle, and I've tried to diagnose a couple of things.
Okay, stop, because we only have 2 minutes in the segment. Let me ask you a question. Is it low, cold, and hot?
Yes.
Is it low air conditioning on, air conditioning off?
When the air conditioning is on, sometimes it goes up.
Okay, perfect. And what does low mean? Are you looking at your tach? Is low 500, 600?
700.
700?
Yeah.
And that's in drive? 700 in drive?
Yep.
What's the matter with that?
It stalls occasionally and surges when I stop.
How many miles are on this Elantra?
290,000.
Okay. If I were the shop, I would say to you this. I want to clean the throttle blades. I want.
Did it?
Who did it?
1 minute.
Me.
Okay. Well, you did you? Do you know where to clean the throttle blades? Where's the most important part of cleaning the throttle blades?
I don't understand the question.
Okay. All right. Well, we're up against a time constraint, so I'm going to put you on hold, and we'll get you on the other side of the hour. But the question is when you clean the throttle blades, what portion of the throttle blades did you clean? Did you clean the front side of the blades or the back side of the blades? What did you clean? How did you clean it? Did you use a carburetor spray? Did you use soap and water? What did you do? Because I'm thinking that what you did is not what I would have done, and I'll share that with you. But I'm kind of interested in, and then I'll take your second question as well on the other side of this. So just stay right there. We've got four open lines, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I'm Mark Stedman. We'll be back.
Again, here's Mark.
Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. If you'd like to join this, we're talking about cars, and we've got another hour, 602-508-0960. I want to tell you about Automatic Transmission Exchange, which is in Phoenix. If you go up and down Washington and you do it on a regular basis, you're going to see Automatic Transmission Exchange. It's called ATE. They've been in the same location at 40th Street in Washington since 1968. So they're not spring chickens. They're gray-haired guys that have been around the block more than a few times. They do all kinds of transmission repairs, and if necessary, and you okay it, they'll do a replacement or an overhaul. They've gone to the next level because they take your transmission after they overhaul it and put it on a piece of equipment and verify all the shift points work, and it works good in drive and reverse and in park, which eliminates a significant amount of time by installing it and then finding out you got a problem and then having to take it out and fix it and put it back in. So they've spent some money to ensure that the car will be not be there for the rest of its life as they fix things, put it in, fix things, put it in. So Automatic Transmission Exchange, a good transmission shop for those of you in Phoenix, 40th Street in Washington, ATE, Automatic Transmission Exchange. Let's go back to Tom. Tom, on your idle problem, did you try adjusting the little screw on the air intake on the throttle blades?
No, I didn't. I assume it's all computer controlled.
Okay. So when you clean the throttle blades, what part of the throttle blades did you clean?
Well, the inside was the most important and also the most difficult to get to. So both sides were cleaned, and the inside of the barrel, about 2 or 3 inches in as far as I could get.
Okay. The most important part of cleaning the throttle blades is when the throttle blades are at rest. It's the dirt line on the top and the bottom of the throttle blades.
Okay.
So as you open and close the throttle blades, we wad up the dirt. I still don't agree that your 700 is bad. Why can't this be an EGR valve that's sticking open and causing it to die?
Help me out. EGR.
Exhaust gas recirculation valve. It's only supposed to be open when you're above throttle, above idle. And if it opens or hangs open when the car dies, then you go in and you clean it up, or you test it, you replace it, or you do something like that. I'm not suggesting you go out there and pull your EGR valve off. I'm just suggesting that your symptoms, you said that it dies and stalls, and your idle's at 700. And dying and stalling in your idle at 700s are kind of different in my world. So if you're dying and stalling, it could be a crankshaft sensor. It could be an EGR valve that's hanging open. It could be an idle air control motor that's so dirty it needs to be cleaned or replaced, because all it does is open and close the air passage to give you the idle. So the idle air control motor, it's called an IAC, idle air control motor. That's how we adjust the idle. It could also be a throttle position sensor, because the throttle position sensor is supposed to tell the computer where the throttle blades are, and if it becomes intermittent, the computer loses sight of the throttle blades, and it'll kill the fuel. So there's a whole lot going on there. But
let me give you a curious symptom that might help you. If I'm standing at idle and I operate something electric, if I put the windows down with the electric motor, when it reaches the bottom and there's a little stress on the motor, the idle drops.
I've never seen that before in my life, so I can't even come close to that.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know. If you came to my shop and you gave me that, and you say, I want you to track down the relationship with bottoming out the windows and the fact that the idle changes, I'm not going to chase that tail. I'm going to chase the idle problem, and I may fix it, and I may not, but if I chase the window thing and it turns out to be the idle air control motor, you're going to spend lots of money while I chase my tail.
Right.
So I would stick with just the facts. Now, then the second question is after you're done, when you raise or lower the window, does it affect the idle? No, it doesn't. Well, whoever fixed your car fixed it right. But that's a completely different thing. We would check the amp draw of each one of the window motors, which means we're going to have to take the door panels off to check the amp draw of each one of them. And if we've got all of them are running 8 to 10 amps and we've got one that's running 30 or 40 amps, then that can cause an electrical substandard voltage that might affect the idle. But I don't think you should check that, or I don't think you should chase that. Anyway, thanks very much. I appreciate it. Let's go. Do we got Lute back?
No, but we got Joe.
Joe, good morning to you. How can I help you today?
Good morning. I have 2007 Tacoma, and the gauge light doesn't come on. So I have half of the dashboard comes on, and the gauges does not.
Okay.
The fuse is all there good, but I'm thinking maybe it's the light something.
Well, it's just really a matter of there's a procedure that you go to. First thing you do is you print out a wiring diagram, and you identify which wires are power and ground. And then from there, you have to probably pull the dash panel out of its compartment and check for power and ground. And then you're going to disconnect and reconnect all the connectors to see if that bad connection causes a problem. So I can't tell you how to fix that. I can tell you most all of us are going to charge you $100 to $150 to figure it out. And there is a small possibility that figuring it out will fix it. So if we go in there and we find that there's a bad connection at the printed circuit board and we fix that, then it was $112 to find it and $8.50 to fix it. But I wouldn't count on that, but I can tell you that that's a strong possibility. So is it the gauges aren't working or the lights aren't working?
No, the light. The only thing is the light. All the other lights work. Just the when I turn the lights on the dashboard, the RPM, the speed diameter, the gauge, the gas gauge, that's the only one that doesn't work.
Okay. Now, did they all go out together or did they go out slowly?
When I bought the car, I bought it this way. There is no, I don't have anything on.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. One of the things that I think you ought to do is just go in and grab one of the bulbs, maybe the one on the fuel gauge, pull the bulb out, put a new bulb in, and see if that brings the fuel gauge back on. If it does, then it looks like you've got a bulb issue. And here's what happens. A lot of guys will go in to behind the dash and pull the bulbs that run the check engine light when they sell their car because they don't want the check engine light to be on. So people will play those silly games, and sometimes when you take one of the bulbs out of the circuit, it can cause the other ones to not work. But in your particular case, my advice is simple. Let's replace one bulb, maybe an easy one we can get without taking the dash out. Let's replace one bulb and see what happens. And then if that doesn't work, you're going to have to pull the dash panel. All right, good luck. Go ahead.
Thank you.
All righty, thank you.
So sorry.
And no, that's okay. That's okay.
We got Loot back.
Okay, Loot, you have one more question.
Yes. What is the low end and high end of that expenses? I mean, just an estimation, how much would I pay for that?
Oh, well, Loot, folks, Loot called in, and he has a dashboard problem as well.
Dashboard and brake, light, tail light brakes.
I can only tell you that the diagnostic fees most everywhere in town is no less than 50 on the low side and no higher than 150, but there's going to be exceptions. But Luke, this is kind of like me asking you how much to paint my house. And you don't know if I live in a three-bedroom house or if I have 40 bedrooms and three levels. So I can't tell you how much the diagnostic is. I can only just give you ranges. And I can't tell you what the repair is going to be because obviously I don't know what that is. But here's what you need to do. When you take your car into a shop, you need to ask them to give you a range on one of the problems. And we discussed that you should either start on the taillight issue, taillight brake light issue, or on the dash issue. But don't do both of them. So let's do one and see if that fixes the other. And if it doesn't, we'll go and fix the other one. But just ask them for a range. Most shops will be able to give that to you. Anyway, the lines are open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960.
Mark is your next caller.
And Mark, just hang on for just a second. I got a little business to take care of. Air Park Auto's been up in Scottsdale since 1985. They're on Raintree just east of Hayden, and Raintree runs parallel to Frank Lloyd Wright or Bell Road. Nadine and Stacy opened up Air Park Auto in 1985, and Renee, my wife, and I became friends with Nadine and Stacy. Stacy was a world-class technician. Stacy passed away, and instead of selling the facility, Nadine stepped in to run it. The reason why that's important to me is because she knows right from wrong, and she's not one to have a technician come in and tell her a story that she knows isn't true. She's smarter than the average bear. So if you're a lady and you want to deal with a lady who really owns an auto repair shop and answers to no man, then Air Park Auto is your shop. But if you live in North Scottsdale, actually if you live from Fountain Hills to 56th Street, everything north of Shea Boulevard, that's the area that I've only got one shop in, and it's called Air Park Auto Service. Okay, Mark, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. Love your show.
Thank you.
Got a question on my 09 CTS, the 6-speed manual, one car, but lately it's got about 51,000 miles on it, about a year. Lately, it has got problems getting it into reverse.
And you say this is a manual?
Yes, 6-speed manual.
Okay. So you come to a stop.
2 minutes.
And you push your clutch in, and you grab a hold of the shifter, and you try to put it in reverse, and it doesn't want to do that.
That's correct.
Okay. Has anybody...
Almost breaking a sweat trying to get it into reverse now.
Say that again?
Almost breaking a sweat trying to get it into reverse.
Okay. What we need to do is I need you to to go out tomorrow morning on a Sunday morning and find a slight incline and do your stop and then pull your shifter into reverse and let it just coast forward. I want to know if 3 inches movement front or back makes this transmission go into reverse. Okay? I also want you to pump the pedal. You come to a stop, and I want you to put it in neutral, and I want you to pump the pedal rapidly 3 or 4 times. Hold it to the floor. Does it go into reverse easier?
If the clutch pedal you're referring to.
Yes, the clutch pedal, yes.
Okay.
If that's the case, then we probably have some fluid problem. We have one slave cylinder problem, some master problem, because by having
one
you
minute.
Pump it up, I'm having you build pressure.
Okay.
Now, if has anybody changed the fluid on this transmission in the last year?
No.
Okay,
no.
Good, because sometimes you put the wrong fluid in it, and it'll cause this problem. I also want you, to do this. This is kind of hard to describe, but I think I'm going to do good enough to. I want you to push your foot to the floor, put it in first gear, and I want you to kind of look and tell me, the car starts moving after the pedal comes off the floor about an inch. I want to know that there's a gap on the floor before it starts moving. Now, I want you to put it in fifth gear kind of early, and I want you to take your foot and put it on the pedal, and I want you to say, Mark, I push the pedal in about an inch. I'm throttling up hard. I push the pedal in about an inch, and the clutch starts slipping. I'm trying to draw a picture that I want play on both sides of the pedal. I want it to come off the floor before it starts moving, and I want you to apply it a little bit before it starts slipping. If you fall outside of those parameters, then you need a clutch adjustment. And that
okay.
might be something that's just as easy as a clutch adjustment. Okay?
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir. You're welcome. 602-508-0960. I'm Mark Salem. Paul's sitting here next to me, and we're answering your question. So 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. The lines are open except for one. One is closed, but we have four available, so if you'd like to join us, you can. I'm going to talk to Manny in just a minute, probably about 20 seconds away, Manny. Kurtz Auto Repair is up at I-17 in Bell. You've heard me talk about Kurtz, and one of the things that we get oftentimes is people call in and tell us that they took their car in for a problem, a symptom, and Kurtz was able to fix it. They also say that Kurtz comes in under his estimate. They also say Kurtz is a great place, but more important, a new customer can expect in the next week or two for Kurtz's wife to stop by with home-baked goods and thank the customer for trusting them to fix their car. That's something that we used to do in the 50s and 60s, but nobody does that now except Kurtz. He's at I-17 and Bell, northeast side of I-17 and Bell. He's been open since 1987. Jeff is his service writer, and Jeff's an ASE Master Tech, which is the highest level you can be, like me. Then we got Eric in the shop, and he's also an ASE Master Tech, so you have two guys in the position of the service that are both Master Techs, and you just really can't go wrong. So those are the guys you talk to. Eric, you won't talk to Eric because he's in the shop, but you will talk to Kurt or Jeff, and they're good guys. Manny, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
First off, I have a 2006 Toyota Corolla, and what I'm looking for today is a shop recommendation that I can take to in my area. My symptoms on my car, it's emission time, check engine lights on. One of the little auto parts stores that I took it to check it had a P0441, which is an incorrect purge flow on that car. So, I took it upon myself. They told me some things it could be. I replaced the gas cap, the purge valve, and the charcoal canister on the thing. Light still on. And I'm looking for a shop that could possibly help them in not only diagnose it for me, but fix it.
Okay. Aren't you mad at that three-whiskered kid for making stupid recommendations and you spent all that money and it did you no good? Manny, I'm not mad at you, but this is a good. You and I are going to make an example. So, what happens to me, Manny, is that people will come to me and say, I've already spent $200 and nothing's fixed it. And so I would like you to look at it. And now they hold my feet to the fire because they've already spent money with the three-whiskered kid at the auto parts store. Let me tell you, Manny, I am not capable of looking at a code and telling you what's wrong with it. And I'll tell you even something more important than that. If your car is connected to the cloud, your Dodge, your Ford, your Chevy, your Honda, your Toyota is connected to the cloud and your check engine comes on, light comes on, the people that are on the other end of that cloud, if they were all had my expertise, they could not diagnose your car because your car doesn't have a fuel pressure gauge, so we don't know if there's fuel pressure. Your car doesn't have an emissions tailpipe test where we can't tell if the HCs are too high or too low or the CO is too high or too low. These are things that we do. They can't put a smoke test in your gas tank to find out where the leak is at because you got a purge problem. They can't test the operation of the solenoid to make sure that the solenoid is opening and closing the purge valve. Now, if the solenoid works and we artificially inseminate it with power and ground, then the question is what are we missing? So we have power to the solenoid all the time and the computer's got the ground under control. So if the computer's not opening and closing the purge valve, then the question is, does the computer being told to open and close the purge valve? So we got these kids that look at the codes, and you can tell that my panties are wadded up, something fierce. And this kid is selling parts to people, and he's never right. Let me tell you this. The O2 sensor is the most common code that we run against, and less than 25% of the time do we actually replace the O2 sensor. You know what the number one cause of an O2 sensor is? Actually, the number one and number two. Number one, the car has a vacuum leak. And number two, the fuel filter's plugged. And neither one of them is going to be fixed. So killing the messenger is what those kids do. They're paid a commission. They have this little code reader that costs $9.95 on the internet. They look at the code. They look at the cheat sheet. And they say, Manny, well, I think we ought to put a gas cap on it. We ought to put a purge valve in it. And then let's go ahead and put a canister on it. Then maybe let's go ahead and replace the gooculator at the scooculator valves. So what part of town do you live in? I will help you.
I'm off 80, like I-10 and 83rd Avenue in West Valley.
Okay, Thunderbird Auto. Thunderbird Auto at 88th Avenue and Thunderbird.
Right off the 101 then, okay.
All right, and now when you go in there, you're going to talk to Tom, okay?
Okay.
And you're going to say this. You're going to say, I'm a first-time customer of yours, and I was actually talking to Mark Salem, and he said not to come here because you guys don't know what you're doing. But you live, you are kind of close to me, and so I thought I'd give you a chance in spite of the fact that Mark Salem said you couldn't fix a leaky water hose. And he's going to laugh, but here's what happens. He knows we talked. There's a little bit of pressure, but I want to assure you of one thing. There's no back rub on this deal. I'm not taking a part of your commission. I'm not taking any money from Thunderbird Auto. I would refuse it if they offered it to me, and they never have because they understand all the shops that I refer to. My hand is not out. The palm of my hand is not out. I shake hands with other shops, but my palm of my hand is not out. So you go to Tom, tell him what you've got. Here's what he's going to do. He's going to check the power and ground to your solenoid. He's going to fill the system with smoke, and then he's going to plug in his scanner that costs about $5,000 as opposed to a code reader that costs $9.95. And he's going to say to the scanner, when I tell you, I want you to open the purge valve. And then he's going to put his hand on the purge valve. Then he's going to say, okay, open it, and it's not going to click. And he's going to go, okay, I got a power and ground. That's what. So I make it sound pretty simple. It's not.
2 minutes.
The equipment is pretty sophisticated. Okay.
Oh, yeah. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Thunderbird Auto it is. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We have Tom with a follow-up question.
Okay. Paul.
Yes.
This is a day in your life, isn't it?
It is.
It is a day in your life. So what I want to know real quick is I'd like to know from your wife, Jan, who's sitting here, does he bring his work home?
Not anymore.
Okay. She didn't even look at you before she answered. And you know, my wife, she doesn't let me do that. She says, leave your problems at the door. don't come home and think you're going to complain to me about your whole day, even though she works here. Mm-hmm. She says, I'm not interested. She says, there's a time you just walk away. So I've learned how to do that, but I'll go out to the barn and talk to the horses if I really need a psychiatric, you know, moment. I'll go talk to the horses. The problem is the horses will never really give me any information. They'll just kind of look at me like you're an idiot. So, but it helps with my mental health.
Yeah, I'm sure
but
it does.
This, it's important, the symptoms. It's important. It's important that you don't let people guess with your money, which is that three-whiskered kid at the auto parts store. And it's important to hold the... Now, when he goes to Thunderbird Auto, he says to him, I don't want to pay for guessing. I want to pay for fixing. Mm-hmm. So there's three parts of this repair. Diagnostic, to give me a range, mm-hmm. then call me back with the part and the labor.
Right.
And I want a total price before I bring... I want to write my check before I come down and pick up my car. There's nothing wrong with that conversation, right?
That's correct.
Okay. All righty, 602-508-0960. We've got, who have we got on a follow-up?
Tom.
Tom. We got Tom on, and he will take him at first, but if we got four open lines, 602-508-0960.
The polyglot wheel, the end result of the dream of Henry Ford.
Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Let me tell you real quick about S&S Tire. They're in the West Valley, Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. And S&S Tire, they have what a lot of other shops don't. When you walk in and bring your car, they can give you three different prices for good, better, best tires. They're going to give you a price for four tires, mounted and balanced, all the FET, all the sales tax, everything. So they'll also explain the differences in the three different tires with respect to expected mileage, the quality of the tire, the warranty of the tire. They'll do all that. Very few places will have three tires, three different brands of tires in the same size. So S&S is pretty special when it comes to that. They've got tires from wheelbarrows to tractors and everything in between. So if you want to get a wheelbarrow tire for your wife, then S&S is a good place for her wheelbarrow, of course. It's a good place to go. But if you're looking for new tires or any suspension work or alignment work, then S&S Tire is my shop on the West Valley. Let's go back to Tom. Tom, Tom, how are you?
Hi. It's back to the Hyundai Elantra, 2013. I had a question replacing the rear brake pad. The caliper, in order to retract the caliper to get the new brake pads in the front you just compress it. In the back there's a pair of holes that from what I understand I'm supposed to turn.
Yes.
Is it a combination of turning and compressing, or is it just turning? How do I retract the
you're just going to take some long needle-nose pliers and stick in those two holes and try to wind it clockwise.
Wind it clockwise. It doesn't seem to move. How many turns is it? Is it like 50 turns or 12?
I have no idea because I don't know how far they're out. I don't know if you ran them to metal, but you don't have the right tools to do this. So there is a special tool to do this, and there's also, I can't tell you for sure that you're going to go clockwise or counterclockwise. I don't know. But most of the time it's clockwise, and most of the time you're not going to be able to get needle-nose pliers into those two holes. Sometimes you can if you bend the needle-nose pliers. Like I'll take a pair of needle-nose pliers and heat the tips and just bend them into a 90-degree, and then that way I can just use that. To wind it if I don't have the right tool. But in your particular case, there's a good chance, whatever you do, don't put a pair of water pump pliers on the outside of that piston. Because if you mar up that piston, you're gonna be buying a pair of calipers. So don't do that. If you can't wind the piston in using something that you can make yourself, then you're going to have to go rent a caliper. And all you're doing is winding the caliper back in its hole, because when it comes out, it threads its way out and it takes up the rear adjustment. So the right tool for the right job, that's kind of what you're probably up against. Anyway, thank you. Felix, you're up next. Felix, how can I help you?
Hey, Mark, how's it going?
Good. Good, Felix.
Hey, I've got, two Toyota high mileage Toyotas. And I've been using Mobil 1 for years, and I noticed in Walmart that now they've got the high mileage Mobil 1, and I'm wondering, is that marketing hype to charge more money for the high mileage stuff, because they say they've got conditioners for the seals and that kind of stuff in your car?
I think there's two Mobil 1s now, right?
There's a whole bunch of them, actually.
And okay. But
I used to use the normal stuff, but then okay. I noticed they got the high mileage. It says for greater than 75, and I've got way over 75K in my car, you know?
Okay, but they also have an extended.
Yes, they do.
Okay. So you just have to look at all three of them, probably on the website. But the extended is 1 year not to exceed 15,000 miles. One of them is 1 year not to exceed 12,000 miles. And the other one is something in between or below that range.
What my question was, when they say it's high mileage, you know, they charge some more money for high mileage because they say they've got conditioners for your seals. And I'm asking, is that marketing hype or is that worth paying extra money for the, quote, conditioner for your seals and that kind of garbage?
Okay. All right. So if I put 1/100th of a drop of some conditioner in your quart of oil, how would that make you feel?
Not good.
Okay. The fact of the matter is there's no scrubbing bubbles, so there's no heavy detergent. And detergent doesn't clean anything. The detergent holds the dirt in suspension until the oil goes through the filter. The conditioners, if you've got a high-mileage car and you're over 100, 150,000 miles, you can put all the conditioners in the world in there, and if that seal decides to go to seal heaven, it's going to go to seal heaven. So the answer to your question is don't buy based on the marketing hype. Try to find an oil that fits. Now, have you and your wife figured out what kind of car you're going to buy her?
RAV4.
Okay. Did she make that decision?
She did. We actually went down on the way to see the grandson, and she actually drove it, and she liked it.
And so you had no part in that. You let her make that decision.
No part in it whatsoever.
I know. Well, Gil, do we have any applause? Yeah. Oh, perfect. Let's do that all together. Well, Felix, I'm happy that you're happy, and I think you made a wise decision. I told you from the very beginning. I told you a year ago, if it's her car, let her pick it out, because the worst thing that's going to happen, as the marriage counselor, I have tremendous experience in marriage counselor. As a marriage counselor, it's a bad idea for the husband to pick the car for the wife. You'll never, ever hear the end of that. So by letting her pick the RAV4 and driving it, and if you paid for it, home run. All righty, Felix, thanks very much. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we've got open lines, by the way, 602-508-0960. All five of them are open. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Every Saturday, we're here from 10 to 12, talking about car and car repair issue. My email address is Mark, M-A-R-K, at SalemBoysAuto.com. Mark at SalemBoysAuto.com. That's the easiest way to get a hold of me. But you're welcome to call and leave a message if that's what you want to do, but email's by far. And if you leave me your phone number, you have to understand, I hate to type. So if I can call you from a blocked cell phone, I would prefer to do that. So if you'll leave me your cell phone number or your house number, and just know I'm going to call from a blocked line, because my wife did that. And I said, why did you do that? And she says, before we blocked your line, you used to have calls from 6 o'clock in the morning till way late in the evening. And I said, so what's the problem? And she didn't really think that was funny. But nevertheless, let's go. Let me tell you about Action Auto Repair. I-17 in Deer Valley, Tom owns Action Auto Repair. He's on the northwest corner. This is a full-service, family-owned auto repair shop. He has ASE Master Certified Technicians. Tom is a guy that knows right from wrong. He's also a great technician himself, and I've known him personally since the late 70s or the early 80s. He's a stand-up guy. Tom's the kind of guy you'd want to marry your daughter. That's probably the highest compliment I could pay him, is that's the kind of guy he is. So if you live anywhere near Deer Valley and I-17 and you don't already have a shop, may I suggest that you try Action Auto. Now, Tom's married, by the way, you ladies, so don't think that you're going to go there and grab some great guy. But I'm just using that as an example and a description of what kind of a guy he is. All righty, Alex, how can we help you today?
Hey, good morning, Mark. I've got a 2003 Saturn Ion with about 217,000 miles. Everything works fine on it except the air conditioning. When you turn it on, the engine really wants to bog down. It won't die, but it's, you know, like the throttle, the revs just will not come up to where it wants to run smoothly. I'm just wondering, what can I do?
Well, actually, there's probably nothing you can do, but let me explain. That's a Saturn, right?
Yes.
Okay. More than like, keep in mind that the way we raise and lower the idol is we open up an air orifice. Okay.
Right.
So when you turn on the air, we should be telling a solenoid to create a vacuum leak or change the airflow to gain that RPM back. So if you idle in drive at 600 and you turn on the air should not drop 100 and drop you to 500. When you turn on the air, it should immediately compensate and bring you back to 6. So what's wrong with yours is why aren't we doing that? So is the air passage dirty after 217,000 miles? Is the idle air control motor not working and stuck in one position?
Well, I replaced the throttle body with a new pintle valve and all that about 3 months ago.
How much did that cost you?
Just about $120. I did it myself.
Okay. Well, in reality, the air conditioning is going to have a particular sensor or a particular circuit on it that's going to talk to something to make that idle kick up. So as soon as you turn on the air conditioning, it could very well be assigned to the switch. So when you turn on the air conditioning with the switch, it then energizes a solenoid that creates a vacuum leak that raises the idle or some other facet. So it's just really a matter of tracking down and opening up your service manual and saying, looking at the wiring and saying, oh, I see, we're coming off the low pressure switch and we're going over to this solenoid and this solenoid then opens this vent and the vent is adjustable. Oh, the vent is bad or something like that.
Okay.
So that's kind of what you've already done the throttle body and you did an idle air control motor with that, yes?
Yes.
Okay, now there is a synchronization that has to occur between the blades, the TPS, and the idle. Did you do that when you were done?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, when I first started it, I hadn't done that, and the thing wouldn't get below 5,000 RPM.
Okay.
So went through, calibrated the whole thing, and it runs fine.
Okay, all right. And I applaud you for that because that's called setting minimum idle authority. That's kind of synchronizing the TPS and the throttle blades and the idle air control motor. And most people can't do that. So I want to tell you, if you were able to do that, then on a 1 to 10 scale, you just went from a do-it-yourself or a 1 to probably a 4 or a 5 in my book. So
great.
Congratulations for
Thank
that.
Thank you.
All righty. Thank you very much, Alex. Do we have anybody
Daniel
else?
Is your next caller.
Daniel, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hello. I'll ask this the best way I can. I've got a 77 Dodge Power Wagon, four-wheel drive, with hubs. Most all the four-wheel has been mountains and high desert. If I decide to go to Flag in a blizzard, I lock in the hubs on the pavement, put it in four high, which would be a cruising speed.
You could normally, I think I'd stay 60, 65, but in
truly
reality... Yeah.
Locked in. Okay.
Well, wait a minute. So you're telling straight ahead. I know what you're saying right now. You're saying I've locked the front differential to the rear differential.
I put it in four-wheel. Yeah, I'd lock in the hubs.
Okay. And you're going to four low, right?
High.
Oh, four high. Four high. Yeah. Okay. If all the tires have the same inflation, and if all have the same circumference, and you're going straight ahead, then I think 60, 65 would be appropriate.
All right.
But if you're turning left and right, the answer is, whoa, let's
back that
way down.
I drive with conditions.
Okay. Now, why wouldn't you just stay in two-wheel drive until all the cars are skidding in front of you and all the city guys are in the ditches, and then you put in four-wheel drive? And
that was on my mind. Could I lock in the hubs and leave the transfer case in two?
Bingo. Now, I don't know if you do this or not, but do you ever lock the hubs like once a month for a day?
Yeah, I take it out to lube them and things
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, it's exactly right. And you know what? Have you had that Power Wagon for a long time?
27 years.
Oh, God almighty. When I was a policeman, there was a guy named Paul Anderson, and he took an old Power Wagon, and he made that into one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen in my life. I mean, that truck was so perfect. And your Power Wagon is worth twice as much as it was brand new today.
And I did put the limited slip in the front end.
Okay. That's another $1,000 ad.
That's a good choice, front end.
Yeah. But if you just lock the hubs for one day, now for me, I go to four-wheel high in my new Dodge, and I go to four-wheel drive, but I just stay on the freeway. and I probably drive for 2 hours straight ahead. Speed is not an issue because I can do 60, 65, no problem. But all I want to do is just spread the oil around, and I want to get the front gear oil hot enough to where I can boil any water out of it.
Let me get that straight. That would be locking in the hubs but leaving the transfer case in two-wheel drive?
Yes.
But drive it on the street and lube it that way, too.
That's exactly right. Yeah, just lock the hubs but leave the transfer case in two-wheel drive, which means the front drive shaft's not activated, but you've locked the front wheels to the differential. So now we're spraying that oil all over that front differential, but it's not connected to this transfer case.
I'm smiling.
Okay.
All right. There's been a lot of time and effort to keep this 27-year-old possession of mine great shape.
Have you got kids? Have you got older sons?
I do have a son, and I'm not sure he wants it, but there's some family members own ranches. I'm sure they'd love to have it.
All right, well, I want to raise my hand. So if things turn south on you and nobody wants that truck, I'd like to look at it. So, but anyway, thanks for calling. I really appreciate it.
You're more than welcome. All right. I appreciate that. Good advice. Thanks.
All righty.
David is your next caller.
David, good morning to you. How can we help you, buddy?
Good morning. I have a question regarding an 04 Ford F-150. Transmission flush versus changing the fluid.
How many miles are on it?
134.
And what was the last thing done? Was it a pan and gasket or was it a flush?
Pan and gasket.
Then I'd do a flush. Here's my opinion. First of all, the old wives' tale about once the fluid gets brown, if you change it, it'll wipe the transmission out. That was then true, but those fluids were also in Fred Flintstone and Barney Rubble's wooden cars. Okay? So the fluid we have today is completely different than what we had last time. I'm of the opinion, in your truck, at about 60,000, I would do the pan and filter once, and the next time I'd do the flush. And then I would alternate back and forth. The pan and filter gets 4 of the 10 quarts. But it gives you a chance to look at the pan. Now, keep in mind, there's going to be 2 or 3 little mounds of black crap in the pan. You have to have an expert eye to know if that's too much or too little. And actually, there's not too little. But those are places where the material from the clutches falls. When you take the pan off, we want to look for broken snap rings. We want to look for bushing material. We want to look for signs that this thing is going to, you know, turn in the towel here. So we do the pan and the filter for that reason, so we can look at the pan and change the filter. But the next time we flush it. So in my opinion, if you bounce back and forth at every 60,000 miles, I think you're probably doing the very best you can.
Very good. How about a shop in Southeast Mesa? Northeast Mesa.
No, I don't have anybody in Mesa except Thompson's. I've really tried to get shops. I've had them apply. And for some reason, like perhaps they don't have 5 years under the same management. Perhaps their Better Business Bureau record isn't to my liking. Perhaps their vendors don't have anything nice to say about them. There's a variety of reasons that guys, but there's lots of good shops in Mesa that are not on my list. So it's okay with me. I just don't have anybody except Thompson's. Now, can I make a suggestion? I think you should call Brian at Thompson's Auto and ask him for Northeast Mesa, because those of us know the good guys in our circle, and those of us, and just say to him, I know you're down in the central part of Mesa, but I'd like somebody closer to my house. Is there anybody you like up here? He's a good guy. He'll tell you.
Very good.
All right. Thank you, David. Thank you very much.
I'm on my way to Home Depot. I'm on my way to Harbor Freight to get the sensors you talked about.
Yeah.
Sensors for my toy hauler and put in my pickup.
All right, let me tell you about Home Depot. I found this out, Paul. I got a Home Depot card. Everybody should have a Home Depot card, okay? Everybody. So they have this new gas program, and my wife knows about it because she pays the bills. But in the bill, there's this new gas program. So she pulls in the other day, and she says, well, she swipes her Home Depot card. It gives her $1.27 off a gallon of gas.
Wow. Real.
And I said, well, that's good enough for me to get a couple of those cars. But that was something. Now, I have, admittedly, a Lowe's and a Home Depot, and then I have a Master card, I have a Discover card, and then I have company cards and personal cards. But the Home Depot card is the most important card for me. I can lose everything else as long as I got the Home Depot card.
I agree with that.
So anyway,
you're more often than anywhere else.
Yeah, that's exactly right. All righty. Thank you, David. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your show. Appreciate
you bet.
It.
All righty. Gil.
That's it.
That's it. All righty. Paul, thank you for spending your Saturday with me. Jan, thank you for spending your Saturday with me. The purpose of this radio show is just to help them say the right things to us, mm-hmm. and it's to help them understand when they hear A and B, that the guy A wants to sell them everything in the, under the sun, and the guy B wants to deal with the symptoms in their car. We talk about asking for your old parts back. Why do you do that? The answer is because if they didn't fix your cars, you can go back and say, here's my four motor mounts. Put those back in because I still have the same vibration. and the guys aren't going to put the parts in the car if they're ashamed of the
parts. 2 minutes.
So there are times that people will call me and say, I want to bring by a fan clutch, or I want to bring by a shock absorber, or I want to bring by a part, and I want your opinion on it. Fine, bring it by. I can tell you whether it's good, better, or best. Mm-hmm. I can tell you whether it's new or old. I can tell you whether that's something I've replaced before. And I appreciate the fact that you trust me to make those decisions. But the idea is, and then I want them to talk about guessing and fixing. So it's appropriate to guess. Here's what a guess sounds like. Mrs. Jones, you've got an old Chrysler K car, a Dodge Aries. It's got a little 2.2 liter in it. They've updated the pickup assembly, and there's 8 colors. You have the very first color, which is white, and the yellow one is the newest. The symptoms you have are caused by this almost all the time, but I can't get your car to do it. So here's the opportunity. Here's the opportunity I offer you. It's $129 parts and labor, but it's a guess. You need to accept that. I'm guessing it's the best I can do. But I can't get your car to die. You admit that sometimes it'll die 3 times a day and it'll go a month without it. But this is a good, educated guess. So just think it over and call me back. That's what a guess sounds like. I'm guessing with your money.
Right.
So, but fixing is quite a different story. So you're going to fix my symptoms. Let's regurgitate that. I have a vibration. I have a clunk. I have this. I have that. And you're going to fix that. Yes? Yes. Okay. All right. We'll put my old car parts in the car, and I hear that you're going to fix it. All right. Well, thank you very much. That's what it's about. Mark@MarkSalem.com is my email address. Mark@MarkSalem.com. Spend a nice Saturday. God bless you. See you next week.